Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Improving health outcomes for Alaskans is at the heart of a multi-billion dollar federal plan aimed at improving rural healthcare systems. Alaska is in line to receive as much as $1.3 billion over 5 years. What will the funding support, and what do state health officials think Alaska's healthcare systems need to help all Alaskans have healthier lives? We'll learn about the Rural Health Transformation Program today on Talk of Alaska.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, on Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, Your Health Connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, Your Health Connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
From Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. What are the best ways to transform healthcare systems to help Alaskans stay healthy, keep costs down, and improve access? So regardless of whether you live in an urban or rural area, you have local quality care. Alaska's healthcare leaders and state government are working together to clarify that for the future health of Alaska's citizens. It's a big lift. Nearly $300 million is coming to the state, and that's just a start. The money has to be obligated to projects by October, about 8 months from now, and spent within the next year. That sounds like a huge amount of work in a fairly short time frame. Here to help us understand what the money allows the state to do for statewide health care is the commissioner of the State Department of Health, Heidi Hedberg. Also with us today is Dr. Ann Zink. Dr. Zink is the former chief medical officer for Alaska. She is an emergency room physician and a senior clinical fellow at Yale. And Philip Hofstetter is the CEO of the Petersburg Medical Center. All are with us today. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
You can also join us, Alaskans. What are your questions for how these federal funds will be used? Do you have ideas for what would be helpful in your community? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. All right. So, Commissioner Hedberg, please start us off here with an overview. The funding came out of the Trump administration's large tax cut bill that also cuts Medicaid. We'll talk about that a little later. How were the funding amounts per state determined, and how will this funding help improve healthcare systems in Alaska? What can it be used for?
Yeah, good morning, Lori. And that's a great way to start off. July 1st is when HR 1 was signed into law, and it created the Rural Health Transformation Program. And Medicaid cuts I want to clarify that. That's related to the provider taxes and state-directed payments. Alaska is in a really unique position. Alaska does not have provider taxes or state-directed payments. So I know that that definitely impacts the lower 48 for Alaska. It also created the Rural Health Transformation Program, which is a great opportunity for us to use this one-time investment to address our some of our healthcare challenges that we have all been living and experiencing and facing, and say, here's our problem set. We're going to use this funding so that we can really focus in on prevention activities, that we can drive down our chronic diseases so that Alaskans are healthier. We have challenges with our payment models in Alaska. Right now, we are fee-for-service predominantly in the state. And so we're going to be working with clinics, hospitals, providers to evaluate different models to see if this is a fit to move from our current volume-based payment methodology into a more value-based. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. And then there's also this opportunity with funding coming in to look at the new technologies that are emerging and look at technology as tools that really can help our clinicians and help Alaskans so that we have data more easily available. And we also need to strengthen our workforce. There's a big focus around looking at how we can grow our own in Alaska and really increase our healthcare workforce.
And the fund is called Rural Health Transformation, but the funds for Alaska will help the entire state, correct?
That is correct, yes, sir.
So even Anchorage is considered rural in this plan. All right. Commissioner, when I think of hundreds of millions of dollars coming to the state for multiple years, I wonder if new hospitals and clinics will be built. Will they?
That's a great question, Lori. You know, this funding is not for new construction. There's been a lot of work done at the community level, and I would love to pass it over to Dr. Ames or to Phil to kind of talk about at the community level, the plans and the problem sets and the plans to address those problems. And sort of at a community level, how we're going to be leveraging this fund to help us around truly supporting Alaskans where they're at and promoting health, looking at technology and how we can use it as a tool to help providers and clients and our workforce.
And before I move to Dr. Zink and Mr. Hofstetter, Alaska is, if I'm understanding this correctly, is getting the highest amount of funding per capita of any state. And what does that speak to? Our state's lack of roads and broadband? What went into the consideration to send our state the most funding? And because it's coming through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, what are the requirements or constraints about how it can be used?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lori. So the application had a lot of different technical factors that went into the methodology for determining the actual award amount that we received for Alaska. Part of that had to do with the nature of how rural, and in Alaska we say frontier, our state is. Part of it had to do with, the lack of infrastructure that we had and sort of the picture that we painted in our application. There was also various technical factors on different policies and if Alaska had those policies and if there was a commitment to those policies. And so I think all of those different components created and really positioned Alaska well for our scoring.
All right. Dr. Zink, turning to you, rural residents have poorer health outcomes generally. These funds are aimed at changing that. Talk about what, beyond buying swell new equipment, these funds can actually do to change health outcomes for folks.
Yeah, it's a great question. And thanks so much, Lori, for having us, and excited to have Phil here and Commissioner Hedberg to kind of engage with Alaskans on the ways that this can think about the health and well-being of our future, of our state, for us, for our kids, for our families, for our elders moving forward. You know, as you mentioned, the outcome in rural America has consistently been worse than urban America. That's not unique to Alaska. That's true across the country. And there's a multitude of factors for that. We have a very urban-centric healthcare system. You know, when I trained as a physician, you know, you train with all your specialties around you. And, you know, in cardiology, going out to Bethel is different than it is working at the Mayo Clinic or being in a big urban center. And so there's technology components to that. There's workforce components as that Heidi had mentioned. And there's also a real component of volume. So if you're a primary care clinic and you're thinking about who you're going to serve, you know, it's kind of different requirements for Medicaid or Medicare or private insurance or state insurance. And all that complexity can just add to a lot of difficulty in being able to provide care. So these funds are one-time funds, and they are transformative funds. So they are not supposed to be sustainable. They're not supposed to replace existing funds. They're not supposed to fill gaps, but they're supposed to fundamentally change the way that care is done to be able to align care and systems to better serve patients and patients' needs. So I think about the things that are required to simplify some of the bureaucracy to being able to change what a clinician needs to do. You know, I worked a shift last night and, you know, patient comes in and they got seen by another clinician in another town and I couldn't see their records of what they needed. And that takes a lot of time and effort to be able to see what that looks like and to be able to have those records there and associated with that patient so I can see them and I can take care of them. So I'm excited to think with Alaskans, for Alaskans, on the ways that these dollars can be used. And just really a huge shout out to the Department of Health for an amazing application that allows Alaskans to be engaged, and why I appreciate you taking time on Talk Alaska to be engaged, because the success or failure of this is not going to be dependent on the governor or the commissioner or any one person. It's going to be dependent on all of us learning about these funds, engaging in these opportunities, seeing things differently than we have before, and working together to envision a brighter future for Alaska.
Thank you for that, Dr. Zink. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about the Rural Health Transformation Program, a federal program that will send hundreds of millions of dollars to Alaska, as much as $1.3 billion over the next 5 years. On the line with me is Heidi Hedberg, the Commissioner of the State Department of Health, Dr. Ann Zink, former Chief Medical Officer for Alaska, and Philip Hofstetter, CEO of the Petersburg Medical Center. You can join our statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, you can call 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Mr. Hofstetter, I want to turn to you now. Thanks for your patience. You said earlier that this is likely once-in-a-lifetime type funding, and you see challenges and also opportunities to work with the state and other medical facilities to make improvements. Talk about what you see here for barriers and for ways to move forward in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, for barriers are inherent in Alaska just due to geographic and distance, and providing rural health care services in some of the communities are certainly challenging. I think this is definitely a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to build off of and improve some of the processes in transforming healthcare. The big things to build off of what Dr. Zink was saying, interoperability between our healthcare systems. I can't even tell you how much opportunity there is to improve some of the delivery models related to some of the technology in care. Often in each different system, we have electronic health record systems. But we're still operating, if we transfer patients down to Seattle, Harborview, Anchorage, we're not on the same exact system. And, you know, it seems very basic that the systems would talk to each other, but they simply don't. And that interoperability, you know, when you were transferring records, for example, sometimes we're still resorting to fax machines and e-faxes and things that just don't allow for a good transfer of care. And so those are some areas where I think that we can improve quite a bit. And then building off on the payer side, when claims get processed, how can we actually build off of the technology for interoperability related to the payers on the back end? And that ties into eligibility and redetermination and your plan, things that are pretty complex on the back end to add on to the improvements on the front end when a patient's experience comes into the facility. So those are some of the things I'm looking forward to developing on the innovation side. I'm also very interested in developing telehealth models and delivering distance delivery models related to some of the services that we lack locally, and then building off of our local workforce. I mean, those are just sort of like a snapshot of projects that I'm looking forward with this funding that could actually have a direct impact to our community and developing some opportunities for the future.
And are those sort of the, when you think about specifically about your organization, the Petersburg Medical Center, are some of what you've just described as, do you see those as the highest needs for what these funds can support, or what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking on focusing for the, I mean, I guess the continuum of care model is something that I'm very, very interested in improving on. So when you're looking at some of the gaps in services within our local community, things related to behavioral health services, workforce, RN program or our CNA program, our wellness program, these are things that are not traditionally covered under a payer model currently. So looking at those are grant supported services, typically our home-based care, home health management program, our adult day program, the way that our programs can facilitate and interact with our facility. How does that work outside the hospital? How do we develop models to build off of that? So the funds can actually develop some of those concepts. And then also, what are some interesting or unique payer models that we can look at to support an affordable healthcare model locally in a rural area, and then building off of the payer models and the insurance payers that are on the back end as well, so that we can actually have delivering quality of care into our region that historically is probably the highest in the nation.
Well, that is really interesting, and I later on I want to drill down a little bit there on that payer model idea. But I want to remind listeners that you can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Sticking with you for just a moment here, sir, the legislation that created this funding for rural healthcare also cuts Medicaid. Commissioner Hedberg talked a bit about that, but how much would cuts to Medicaid and possible changes to Medicare possibly affect the residents in your region?
Yeah, the Medicaid that it typically has the greatest impact for our services is long-term care in our elderly services. And those are services that my understanding are not going to be restricted or have cuts related to. A lot of the, what if scenarios down the line are just sort of wait and see. I've been in healthcare in Alaska for almost 30 years now. And, one of the, from the legislative standpoint and to the regulatory standpoint, it's a lot of it is just, more forecasting. From learned experiences, just sort of looking at what that's really going to do down the line. I'd rather focus on what the opportunities for this funding can do to our communities and build off of and develop as opposed to, sort of that timeline down the line, which we just don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Fair enough. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Meg is in Homer. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Yes.
I have lived in Homer for more than 40 years, and I've worked with mental health and disabilities for 35 years. And I see and foresee, and I think all the statistics point to, our aging demographics in our state, and I'm no different aging here, but I see a huge lack of facility and care for senior citizens. There used to be assisted living homes. Because not everybody qualifies and can get into the senior housing, but they still need a higher level of care than being independent in an apartment. And yet they don't qualify for SDS standards. Yet they would qualify to live in an assisted living home that is run in a family home setting with smaller amounts of people with a higher level of nursing care. But I don't see the state promoting this as an idea. When it could be a wonderful building up of the workforce to facilitate having these kinds of privately owned businesses, actually. But caring for seniors and caring for seniors with disabilities in their own communities, I see as a huge lack. And I would really like to see the state step up on the workforce. I work with people with disabilities. We have a huge lack of workforce. I mean, it's great to have these part-time seniors come in and work with us. They are skilled and wonderful to work with, but they can only do part-time. We need more workforce. We need more skilled workforce. The entire state does. I really see the need to push and promote the workforce, the training for the workforce, the CNA programs, and promoting businesses that will care for seniors in community.
All right. Well, Meg, thank you so much for your passion about this issue and your advocacy for elders. Commissioner Hedberg, respond here to what Meg is talking about. She's looking for more opportunities for elders to stay in place or maybe at least in their community, and the idea of more training. How big of a piece of that is this plan going forward?
Yeah, thanks. Great. Meg, I love your passion and thank you for calling in. And that's exactly what the Rural Health Transformation Program is about. So again, this funding is coming in and we want Alaskans to have care closer to home. When we look at our demographics and we look at our statistics, our fastest growing demographic is our senior population, our elders. And we know that there's additional support that they need, supports that they need to live in community. That is absolutely an appropriate use for these funds. And so a lot of the work that we have been doing over the past several months is working with associations that represent the providers and the clinics and the hospitals and our tribal organizations to say, this is what the funding is used for. What are the gaps in your community? Do you need more CNAs? Do you need community health workers, which is a new workforce in Alaska that we want to develop? That is very much a very appropriate use of funding. And again, the key is that we need healthcare entities, social service organizations that are working in this area to apply for that funding.
All right. Thank you so much for that. And Meg, thanks again for the call. Dr. Zink, I wanted to turn to you for a moment here. Earlier, you noted that one of the problems for small rural healthcare facilities is having a mix of clients that may have private insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. Why is that problematic?
It's a great question. You know, the way that these systems are designed is they're designed to be a system that's efficient for itself. So if you're the Medicaid team, you're thinking about how do I most efficiently run my Medicaid system? If you're Primera, you're trying to figure out how to most efficiently run Primera. But if you're a primary care provider and you're accepting all these different insurances, it can be really hard to know what is an in-network medication, which labs can I use, who else can I refer this patient to? You know, Phil had brought up sending a patient to Seattle, not being able to see records. So who else is in that network and what that space looks like? So from a patient's perspective, they show up to their doctor and, they say, I take two white pills, and they think the fancy computer I sit at can tell me what said two white pills are. But oftentimes I have no idea what that looks like if it isn't a closed system. And so where you see a lot of efficiencies is where it's a completely closed system, where you might be, say like a Kaiser, you're in a big system that is both insurer and provider. You can see the meds, you can see the referrals, and it all works within that space. Unfortunately, my dad had passed away from cancer down in Colorado, and it was impressive. Like, he got care between all these systems of care because it was all one closed network and system, and it was very efficient. It was easy to see. But that isn't the care that we have in Alaska, for the most part, because of all of these different disparate systems that work. And that's true across all of rural Alaska. And that diversity provides unique assets. I'm not saying that we all need to be on the same system or work for the same company or things like that. There's real diversity. What Phil's doing in Petersburg is going to be really different than what someone else is going to need in Utqiagvik, which is going to be very different than Mat Su. And that diversity is needed, but there's technology and ways that we can support both patients and clinicians to better be able to access the care so that they have their labs and records. They know what those two white pills are, and the physician is able to care for the patient. They're able to work with the hospital system. And, I really appreciate Meg calling up and asking about seniors. I mean, that's part about healthy communities. That's part of value-based care. That's part of workforce. Those are all three buckets that are specifically called out in the Department of Health's plan to move forward, such that, someone's end-of-life needs are seen when they show up to the emergency department, or they break a hip and they go to Anchorage and they get it repaired and they go back to Homer. They've got the skilled nursing facility, or they've got the services that are there to be able to keep them close to home and to be able to provide those services. But it is going to take all of us to think about that problem. And I guess I just want to keep emphasizing that this isn't something that the Department of Health is just going to roll out and we shall follow and it will be what happens. So looking at for like letters of intent. So, Meg, how are you interested in what's happening in Homer? Who can you work with to be able to create a better system? And how are you going to think about putting something in? What's Phil going to do? What's the high utilizer program in Mat Su going to do? What's the cardiologist going to do? What's the behavioral health provider is going to do? It's really going to take all of us to think about the work and space we know, who else is working in a similar space, and thinking about how we can work more efficiently and better together for patients.
Mr. Hofstetter, follow up here. How does this mix of different types of private insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, how does that affect the work at Petersburg's Medical Center? And when we're talking about, Dr. Zink was talking about having a system that can talk to each other rather than, as you mentioned, fax machines and other things are still in the mix. It seems like there would be a higher level of security if you had a system that was better at talking to itself across the state. But talk a little bit about what you're dealing with now, how that affects staffing, and what you'd like to see in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I could approach this from a couple of different ways. I've always been a proponent of a single statewide electronic health record, that front to back, that goes from when a patient comes in. But the reality of the situation is it's just not possible. I mean, and so interoperability is something that I think these funds, again, are going to be very interesting to look at and innovate on and evaluate some opportunities that makes that connection point more sustainable. And I want to emphasize that technology is not the solution. It really comes, it's the people that are part of these solutions that allow that connection to occur. And the build off the payer models, I mean, one of the things that's in Petersburg, it's not unique to Petersburg, but we work with all different payers. So we have third party commercial, we have Medicare, we have Medicaid. And I feel like for such a small community, I do have a window into the way that different payers work and how complex it is and how important it is that we have efficiencies in our system. So things like I have employees in our facility, and we have a employer health plan that we work with. And just on that end, in how we work with a payer and the impacts of healthcare that occurs within our employees and how that impacts the plan. For example, medevacs. Medevacs have an outsized impact on health.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Plan. How do we reduce medevacs? How do we get prevention? Some of the things in the savings are not about like these immediate, you know, 1 year single cuts. These are things that we need to look at 5 years, 10 years down the line. And those are constraining inflation. Those are things like having care where people are at. You know, you mentioned elder care, for example. I mean, having home-based services or care in somebody's home and keeping people out of the facility is going to be important on keeping those costs contained down the line, and keeping medevacs, you know, contained, or and maybe having somebody transfer commercially when the time is appropriate, when we can have a space in the care that's appropriate for patient care. So helping that and looking at that from a, to me, what I think is exciting about small and rural areas, you could actually have an impact locally that allows for that, and you can test for that. And so these funding that comes to Alaska and our relationships with the state, our relationships with other facilities is unique, that we're able to actually make a difference. And so those are the things I'm excited about. I'm happy to go down a rabbit holes on any one of these aspects to evaluate or just look at some of the things that we're working on.
All right. Thank you so much for that. We have to take a short break. We are talking about the Rural Health Transformation Program with Commissioner Heidi Hedberg, with the State Department of Health, Dr. Ann Zink, the former Chief Medical Officer for Alaska, current emergency room physician and senior clinical fellow at Yale, and Philip Hofstetter, who is the CEO of the Petersburg Medical Center. We'll be back after a short break.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Not yet a member of this station? Well, today is a perfect day to become one. You simply make a donation. It's that simple.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the Rural Health Transformation Program today. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have ideas for what you'd like to see in your community for transformative work related to healthcare and healthcare facilities, you can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, you can call 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Commissioner Hedberg, did you apply for $1.3 billion, or did the federal government decide what states were getting?
All right, that's a great question. So we submitted a one-time application for the 5 years, and the scoring is all states are competing with each other. And there's sort of two different buckets. There's the first bucket, which is a base allocation that every state will get. So every state will receive a minimum of 100 million. And the second bucket is really based off of those technical factors. And so we submitted our application, and that's when all of the states were notified of their award on December 29th. Every year we need to provide an update to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. That award amount can change, and it really depends if we are meeting our various milestones, if we are appropriately allocating the funding and meeting the goals and the intent behind the Rural Health Transformation Program.
Are the requirements or the reporting, how stringent are they? Is it going to be a lot of work for you, and are you going to have to put more people in place to help with that?
That's a great question, Lori. We are still waiting, just like all of the other states, we are still waiting to hear what the reporting looks like. We know that this summer we're going to have to submit an update to CMS. We're actually meeting with them every week as they are staffing up. We are staffing up as well. I think we are all in this boat together as we truly are looking at how we change access to care and care for Alaskans, as an example, in our state.
Has I just wanted to ask one quick question. Has that first tranche of money arrived at the state yet, or are you still waiting for that?
So we did we received our notice of grant award for the $273. And right now we are revising our budget to go back to CMS, so they can.
Okay. All right. Dr. Zink, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize, I've been getting this question a lot, that the way that CMS structured this is different than a lot of other grants. So in many other times, the federal government says, this is what I want you to do. Here are all the components of it. States go ahead and put your stuff together. The states do it. And it's a grant for the whole set. And then people have to apply for it. I think of the way they set up the Rural Transformation Fund as a conversation between the states, the federal government, and providers over the next 5 years. So it was a chance for CMS to say, this is what I think you should do. And the state said, well, we could do it this way. And they said, okay, you're going to do it that way, but show us how good you're going to do it in a really short time frame, just this year. And if you do a good job, we'll give you more money. And then we can have a discussion about the next step. So I'd really encourage people, don't think like, I don't have an application. I'm not sure what this would look like right now. I'm out of it for 5 years. Or what is this going to look like? This is the time to engage, even in the thought process of what you might want to apply for year two or year three. And so it might be an opportunity to explore what it would look like to get increasing workforce for elder people in Homer, Alaska, for example. And then in year two or three, that is followed up on, or it may not be because that isn't the right fit for it in different ways. So I just really want to emphasize to Alaskans that this is a conversation rather than a set grant, which is very different than previous grant applications and awards.
Thank you for that. And
Thank you so much for bringing that up because I think that it's really important for Alaskans to know. We had 6 weeks to write the application and submit it. But as soon as we saw that this program was created in July, we were really intentional about reaching out to Alaskans, listening to Alaskans. Thank you to everyone that responded to the request for information. I mean, we had well over 160 responses that represented over 400 plus different ideas. I think that the interest and excitement is there because we recognize we need to change. We really do have to change how Alaskans access healthcare, how we pay for healthcare, so that we are aligning, and really incentivizing prevention and caring for all of the different demographics across the state. And so what it is very true, Alaskans' voices are in the application, and Alaskans will carry us through over the course of 5 years that will transition gubernatorial elections, presidential elections. Like, this is a significant monumental opportunity that we have to truly use this one-time funding to help Alaskans become healthier and increase access to healthcare.
And Commissioner Hedberg, as we know, a lot of rural health providers are tribally run, IHS facilities. How are the tribal groups involved in this conversation? And is it all medical facilities all across the state kind of equally in this funding plan?
Lori, everyone has an equal opportunity to participate in the application process. Specific to our tribal health organizations and our tribal partners, we've been very intentional and meeting with, and the Alaska Native Health Board has been coordinating and facilitating those meetings to ensure that the tribal health organizations saw themselves in the applications and really helped craft some of those recommendations or purposes of funding that are in the initiatives. We also met with the Hospital Association, with the Alaska Primary Care Association, with our disability advocacy groups and our seniors to make sure that the issues that they are identifying are represented in our application. Honestly, I think that's why we scored so well, is because we were so intentional about ensuring we were articulating what the problem sets were and using this funding to really help move the needle towards those solutions.
All right, fantastic. Thank you. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Michael is in Anchorage. Hello.
Hi there, and thanks for all you are doing.
Yes, did you have a question?
I do. I'm wondering if there are any funding plans for the often overlooked oral health care dentistry. We know it's a serious indicator of overall health, and just wondering if there's plans in that direction. And thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. That's an excellent question because, yes, oral health is very important for overall health. So how does that fit into this dentistry?
Thank you, Michael, for that question. And the answer is yes. When we look at the health of the whole person, it's the physical health, the mental health, and the oral health. And we were very intentional about weaving that into the proposed funding uses that represent those six different initiative areas.
Okay, great. Dr. Zink, turning back to you for a moment here, you said earlier that transforming Alaska's healthcare system can help people have better outcomes and also lower healthcare premiums. Talk about ideas about how this money can help lead to lower insurance premiums. I'm sure everyone's interested in that.
Yeah, everyone is interested in that, me included. They are expensive, and that is a huge drag on our economy and oftentimes unreachable for so many. Mm. When we have a more efficient system, the system can cost a lot less. And so that is the idea behind this. So I think sometimes people are like, oh, it's the state is working with CMS. This must be a Medicaid system, or this must be a Medicare system. And that's not the case. While these funds can't go to pay for your insurance premium because they can't replace other funds, what they can do is create efficiencies within the system so that the overall cost of care does come down. You know, so Commissioner Hedberg talked about things like workforce. In some ways, we are pretty behind actually in the state in expanding the way that we have a diversity of workforces to support patients. So we do have amazing community health aides in the tribal system. We don't have a lot of community health workers, which are very leveraged in the lower 48 in the ways that patients are used to navigate and help to work through complex care systems, or if they've got cancer, trying to figure out what's next in the variety of ways that community health workers can work. There's some legislative changes that were a part of the application, really kind of per requirement by CMS. And so hopefully those will be able to pass because that will help us to get more funding within the state. So that's everything from compacting so that you can just apply, kind of like, you know, my college daughter applied with a Common App. She had one place and she could choose where she sent it. There is work within states to make that process more efficient for a whole series of providers within the state. So it's more efficient to be able to apply, to get licensing, to get people up here. And so I spend less of my time doing paperwork and being able to move forward. So again, I'm a, you know, ER doctor, and I want more ER doctors to help cover when, you know, our colleagues having a baby, or to come up as our system's growing, and being able to have efficient applications, being able to work within the system makes a huge, huge difference on my everyday work. And that can help overall bring down insurance costs and premiums. The Division of Insurance is doing other work to look at how to increase primary care. You know, Phil had mentioned this component of being able to see what's there. So instead of me doing a CT and then sending them to Anchorage and then them doing a CT and, you know, restarting meds, we can have efficiencies within that whole space. And again, the more that we move towards healthy communities and prevention, healthy patients are oftentimes cheaper patients. And the more that we can empower individuals to care for their own health and health needs so that they can see their meds, their interests. You know, I really want to shout out again to the department for their work on the Fresh Start program, which actually isn't directly related to this, but is kind of similar. It was a sense to providing every Alaskan, regardless of their insurance type, the ability to address their diabetes or hypertension or weight loss goals or help to prevent dementia. And those are efforts that, you know, a primary insurance company like a Premera, a Blue Cross, or an Aetna is also going to be involved in. But this way, just every Alaskan is involved. And then the state of Alaska helps to braid these wellness programs on the back end so that clinicians don't have to know what insurance type you have. You don't actually even have to know what insurance type you have. It doesn't even matter if you have insurance. You can access these programs overall. So instead of waiting for the system to accept patients when they're really expensive, we had a sweet elderly gentleman the other day who'd been watching his blood pressure for 6 years, watching it grow higher and higher, but he didn't have access to healthcare, waiting for Medicare, and then he had a stroke and came into the emergency department. That's not good for him. That's not good for the healthcare costs. That's not good for the system as a whole. And so the more that we can think about prevention and move upstream, the more that we can decrease our insurance costs and the way that we can make systems more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's such an important example, a sad story, but really an important example of, yes, when people think, well, I just have to wait until this, I can get on Medicare or my insurance kicks in or something. And in the meantime, possibly getting much more ill. We are going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about transforming Alaska's healthcare systems as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Whether this is your first try to quit or you've been down this path before, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help you quit for good. Get help creating a plan that is right for you, no matter if you smoke cigarettes, vape, use smokeless tobacco, or ICMIC, with options like calling a coach, receiving text messages, and nicotine replacement therapy like patches or gum. You can quit your way at any time of day or night. Call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the Rural Health Transformation Program that will send hundreds of millions of dollars to Alaska over the next 5 years. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have ideas or questions about what could be possible in your community for transformation of healthcare systems. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Mr. Hofstetter, describe what a critical access hospital is and how it differs from urban areas.
Yeah, hey, That's a very good question. And critical access hospital is specific to rural. It's a Medicare-based program. It operates in a system that's a little different from other types of health systems because it's reimbursed based off expense and provided the services within the hospital. So I call it basically a true-up system. So if you're seeing a lot of patients and you're profitable under a Medicare program, you actually have to pay Medicare back. And then vice versa, if you're not able to see or make ends meet, then you have an adjustment on the Medicare side. It's a way of keeping a small rural facilities whole. Don't quote me on the date, but I think it's back in the 90s when that occurred. And it was at that time, rural hospitals were just closing all over the country. And then that was a method to allocate those. The thing that I would like to say about that is that's very critical in the way that we're able to stay viable within a small community. But one of the things about prevention, that's not part of it. Anything outside the hospital, behavioral health services, home-based care, primary care, those aren't factored in that way. And so when we're looking at these funds for transformation, this is where I get excited about, like, how can we actually deliver some of those services within the community that help keep people out of the facility, out of the hospital, and also keeping us whole at the same time. So bridging those two, I am very excited about being able to have sustainable models related to that. Does that answer the question? I mean, it's more complicated than that, because we also have, under our critical access hospital, we also have long-term care, we have home health program and primary care, and we all have the same staffing. So we float between those two three systems, and we share the same staffing. So it's an efficiency that's already there based off of being in a rural area. So our physicians, for example, they are in the ER, and then they're in long-term care, and then they have to consult on a home-based care patient, and then they're working the clinic. And that's just the reality of rural healthcare. And to me, it's efficiency is already built into the system.
Well, yes. Do you see that type of kind of cross training? Does that set up or offer ideas for creating more efficiencies in other places? Do you think that the system that you're working there could be replicated and should be replicated in other places?
It is in rural areas. It's already there. I worked up in Nome for many years, and it's there. It's a critical access hospital. There's many hospitals across the nation that operate under the same capacity in the same situation. What's a little unique, I think, from Alaska standpoint, is that we have long-term care embedded into our hospital. And sort of as a standalone, in other places, they're more standalone kind of systems. So absolutely, I think is opportunity, and a local workforce. So we have our wonderful nurses that are working the ER shift, and they're working long-term care, but they're also training high school students for our certified nursing assistant program, or community-based CNA program, and also having adjunct professor for through UAA for the RN program. So we wear multiple hats in the community. And we're very proud of that. We work very hard on that. But you know, again, looking at some of these opportunities for transformation and prevention and keeping people out of the facility and developing our workforce locally is something we're very interested in developing further.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Bethany is in Ketchikan. Hello.
Hi. So the problem we have down here in Ketchikan is we don't have a detox center for people who have alcoholism or probably other drug abuse disorders. And it really makes it hard on the family to try to know, you know, how much alcohol to give a person to keep them from dying in the case of alcohol. And a detox center would be a first step to getting people into recovery. And I know that people say, well, they're just going to come out and start using again, but maybe on the 14th or 15th time, they actually won't. So that's my urge for that, some of that money to create detox centers, at least in some communities, you know, hub communities, where people can be transported.
Thank you, Bethany. A very, very important question. Commissioner Hedberg, what are your thoughts about addressing those, what we know are very big needs in our state?
Yeah, Bethany, thank you so much for calling in and asking that question. We know mental health is critically important. We talk about the health of men, and we know that there are gaps in facilities and there are gaps in services. And the rural health transformation program funding can be used to a degree for renovations if there's space. I think this is part of the cooperative agreement that we've been talking about with CMS, is if they would allow for that renovation. But we did build that into our application because, again, Alaskans like yourself, Bethany, responded and said, this is a really big need about substance use disorder. So we think of like, how do we prevent? How do we ensure that there is a place to go for treatment, whether it's inpatient or outpatient at mass scale? And then we look at that recovery and how Alaskans can, every day is a new day, that they can enter into recovery and stay in recovery. And if they slip back, I think that's where Phil had mentioned this continuum of care. We want to make sure that we catch Alaskans. There's a safety net. So there's no wrong door where you're at. You're able to get access to the care you need at the right time.
Thank you, Commissioner. For all of you, this is a lot of money, but there's a lot of need, as we know. Do you have a sense of how far this money will go toward rural or statewide transformation against the amount of financial support that is needed to address these disparities? Is there a lot more than $1 billion in need across the state?
Marie, that's a great question. I think that we're going to make a lot of progress. It is going to take all of us recognizing that we need to change how we work, right? There are tools that we have now. There are tools available to help us, and we have this generational opportunity with this more tech thing to really make those changes. I would say, I don't think this is going to solve all of the healthcare problems in Alaska. Right? I want to make sure that we're managing expectations in that space, but I think that we are going to make a significant improvement if we all partner together and work together as we address the system needs at the community level and statewide.
All right. And Mr. Hofstetter, as somebody who is in charge of one of the facilities in our state, in Petersburg, in an ideal setting, what changes and improvements would you like to see in Petersburg in the next 5 years? What would success look like?
Now we're talking. So a couple of things I would love to see, develop. And, I'm not sure if we can accomplish that, but one of the things that I think I'm very excited about is the state of Alaska passed a bill. I think it's Senate Bill 45 a few years ago, related to direct primary care. And so I think one of the solutions I'm interested in evaluating in our community is how can layer and stratify a payer model that our community members can actually make it affordable. So the direct primary care is a subscription-based model for prevention and primary care. And that allows us as a facility to work with our community, our constituents, to provide prevention based off of a model like that. So, now it becomes affordable where somebody who has to rely on insurance, or maybe they don't have sufficient insurance that prevents them from coming in, I'd like to make it affordable so that they can come in and get their prevention, direct primary care prevention done. And it's not going through insurance, it's working with us directly. And we're allowed to do that now under Alaska's Senate bill. And that's something I think layering that on an existing commercial payer model that potentially, if we can actually look at risk pool stratification, looking at expanding some of the opportunity within our community, and that might be requiring some kind of regulatory adjustment. But in a small rural area, you have you don't have a lot of areas to scale. And so something related to an employee health plan, can we actually work together on sharing some risk pool? So those are the things I'm interested in, looking at how we can actually develop that locally within regulatory statute and also building off of a direct primary care model locally. So that's just one example of something I'm excited about.
All right. Thank you for that. And as we close out here now, Commissioner, are you hearing a lot of ideas coming forward? This is a short window of time to get these funds allocated. Are ideas coming forward?
There's a lot of excitement around this opportunity that we have to really shift our healthcare system. And as Phil said, really focusing in on primary care and prevention, because we know that there are benefits to the person and the health of the person.
and there's cost savings downstream.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks to my guests, Commissioner Heidi Hedberg of the State Department of Health, Dr. Ann Zink, former Chief Medical Officer for Alaska, and Philip Hofstetter, who is the CEO of the Petersburg Medical Center. Thanks to our team on the board. Crystal Hyde was engineering the show today. Our producer and editor is Annie Feit, and Ava White helped us out on the phones. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.